is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
We have young men that come to our institution because they love the game of basketball. They want to play it, but they also want to be successful in life. If someone's able to leave our game and or leave our practice and say, you know what, they play hard. That's probably the best compliment you can give our team and our staff is that we play hard.
Pete Moran is in his fifth season as the head coach of the men's basketball program at John Carroll University in Cleveland, Ohio. Moran succeeded his father, Mike Moran, who held a 25-year tenure at the helm of the John Carroll men's basketball team. Pete served under his dad as an assistant coach at his alma mater for five seasons before being promoted to the head coaching position. Prior to joining the John Carroll staff, Moran was the head coach at Berkshire High School in Burton, Ohio from 2008 to 2011. During his time at Berkshire, Moran led the Badgers to three Chagrin Valley Conference titles and two district championships. He was named the CVC Coach of the Year three times, the OHSAA Division III District Coach of the Year twice, and the News Herald Coach of the Year in 2010. As a player at John Carroll, Pete was a four-year starter, a three-time captain, a three-time All-OAC performer, and scored over 1,000 points while playing for his father. Pete's road to John Carroll as a student-athlete was an unusual one that you'll hear him discuss on this episode. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Jot down some of the valuable lessons to be learned as you listen to this episode with Pete Moran, head men's basketball coach at John Carroll University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Suckle tonight, and we are pleased to welcome to the podcast Pete Moran, the head men's basketball coach at John Carroll University here in Cleveland, Ohio. Pete, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Looking forward to it, Jay. Looking forward to talking to you guys.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on and learn more about your basketball journey. Share that with our audience. I want to start by going back in time to when you're a kid. You grew up in a basketball family. Tell us a little bit about your first experiences with the game that you can remember.
I guess before we even start, the elephant in the room is my father. That's probably the name that's going to be talked about more than myself. Obviously my father was at St. Joe's back then. Now it's called Villa Angel St. Joe's. And my earliest memories of the game of basketball was going to his practices and seeing the likes of Clark Kellogg, Treg League, Eric Riley, Tony Miller, some sensational basketball talent. So I think that's probably my first introduction to the game of basketball is just going to work with Dad. And, from there, it 40 years later, here I sit now, as a head coach at John Carroll University.
What do you remember about your dad as a high school coach? Obviously, you got a chance to work for him, which we'll get to a little bit later there at John Carroll as an assistant. What do you remember as a kid? What do you remember about him as a high school coach?
Well, to be honest with you, Mike, I think my fondest memories of my father isn't necessarily him on the sidelines. My father taught at St. Joe's, and we all know that Catholic education doesn't pay the best. So my father actually in the summer times, our main source of income was painting parking lots. I come from a rather large family. I'm one of six, and to make ends meet and to put food on our table, my father had a striping business that, as a young man, young boy, I should say, myself and my siblings, would have to give up our Saturdays and Sundays, to go paint parking lots. And I think, that really instilled a work ethic. I think that's where it all started. That's where I look at my father and I really, truly idolize him, not for his success on the basketball court, but just, the work ethic that he's instilled in me and my siblings. People don't really know all that much about him other than his wins and losses and state championships and OAC championships. He's an incredible story. He's an incredible human being. And, I was just very fortunate not only to be, raised by him, but also a very loving mother that, is very dear to my heart. And she's probably my best friend in the whole world.
How has that experience with your family growing up as a kid, how has that influenced you with your wife, your kids, and how you've tried to handle that as a coach? Because we all know, obviously, that coaching takes a tremendous amount of time. It probably takes more time now than it ever has. So just how do you balance that out when you think about yourself as a coach? And maybe what did you learn from your dad that you felt like he did well in that area?
I translate, a lot of my, X's and O's and preparation, from him and the amount of work that he put in. I remember as a young boy watching him watch film, I had no idea what he was doing. I'm like, Dad, why are you stopping the VHS? what's going on here? And just watching him and the amount of time that he put into the game. To answer the first part of your question, you got to find the right wife, the right spouse.
That's so true.
I think, I'm equally as supportive as to my wife and her career as she is to mine. And there were multiple games growing up where my father wasn't able to attend of ours. I remember distinctly my brother and I, my younger brother, were playing the district finals. In high school, he was 2 years younger than I was, and I was a senior back at West Geauga High School, and he was unable to come to the game because they were playing in the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. I remember my senior night. He wasn't able to attend because he had a basketball game that night. But I never felt that there wasn't love. I never felt that he avoided those situations. I knew he was working and he was helping provide for our family.
I think that that's a really good lesson. It's something that sometimes people lose sight of in terms of understanding when you feel that support, even if a parent can't be at every single event, especially in today's world and youth sports, and you think about how involved parents can sometimes be in their children's athletic lives. And we so often see people that are kind of going over the top in terms of that involvement. And on the other hand, you can still feel that support, that love, and being able to show that and demonstrate that in different ways. And as you said, he passed along that work ethic and all those things that you learned sort of, even if it wasn't expressly said, you just saw how he was behaving, what he was doing, how he was putting the time in, watching film and preparing for practice and all those kinds of things. When you think about your own basketball career as a player, when was the moment, if you remember, that you started to think that this game was going to be the one that you were going to gravitate to? Obviously, with your family, with your dad, you're around basketball all the time. But when did it kick in that it was more about you becoming a basketball player as opposed to it's just what I'm around because my dad's a coach, if that question makes any sense?
No, it does. And to answer that question, I probably would have to say I was in second grade. And, we grew up in a, Catholic family, and I was attending a different Catholic school, and somehow I was able to play on the another Catholic school sixth grade basketball team as a second grader. And I remember I had 19 points. I don't know how I remember this. This is going back, holy cow, it has to be 35 years. And I remember, that was the moment I fell in love with the game. That's when I knew, I can play this game and I can compete. But before I ever jump ahead of myself, I knew at an early age my limitations. I knew the NBA wasn't calling. I knew Mike Krzyzewski wasn't going to show up on my doorstep. I knew Bobby Knight wasn't coming over, to recruit me. When my dad made the transition from St. Joe's to John Carroll in 92, I distinctly remember my video games back then. NBA Live, you're able to change players' names in the game. And I would change my team to all John Carroll players. So my NBA and my Duke was John Carroll. And I never thought any differently. That was always from my earliest ages. That was my goal in life, was to play basketball for my father at John Carroll University.
What did you do as a player during your high school years in the off season to improve your game? What was it like compared to, let's say, what your players today might do in the off season when you think about the explosion of training and AAU and all that stuff, which thinking back to the time when you played, just how was it different compared to what it's like today? And what are some of the things that you did to become a better player over the years?
I always saw you played against better people, older people. People that were better than you. I my dad always had us playing, higher up levels. I remember as a sophomore or junior in high school, rather than playing at in a high school summer league, he had us participate in the John Carroll summer league. So we were playing against college basketball players. When we were sophomore, juniors in high schools, and most of the people that were in this college league were all obviously college students. I think, though, to tell you a little bit about my story, I'm not sure how much you know about, my background and my story to John Carroll. But out of high school, I was not accepted into John Carroll University. I'm very open and very transparent about my story, and I really wasn't a good student. I graduated West Geauga with about 2.3 GPA, and despite my dad being at John Carroll, they would not accept me. So they advised me to go to a community college, and to be honest with you, I went to the Lakeland Community College, and I basically failed out. I never attended classes. I remember driving by the Lakeland and going, I'm just going to go to the mall, and I would go sit in the mall for 4 hours, and my dad thought I was in class. So about a year went by, and I basically failed out. And luckily enough, a buddy of mine's father worked for Fifth Third Bank. And I got a job as a teller. So fast forward 5 years, 23 years old. I was with the bank for about 4 or 5 years. My dad called me. This was before cell phones. And he said, "Do you want to give this thing one more chance?" And I knew ultimately to get where I wanted to be in life, I needed that education. I needed that degree. You know, to get back into the game of basketball, you know, I needed to get my act together a little bit. So sure enough, 23 years old, I was finally accepted into John Carroll, and I was playing my first college basketball game as a 23-year-old freshman. And my younger brother is 2 years younger than I was, Matt Moran. He was a senior, so I was kind of confused with you know, how the freshman was older than the senior. But I tell you, Mike, I tell that story often. I tell it to a lot of recruits because I'm proud of it. I'm extremely proud of where I was and where I've become. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet my wife. She was a captain of the cheerleading team, and you know, our sophomore junior year we met, and you know, I had three younger wonderful children, and you know, I think God has a plan for everyone, and God's plan for me was you know, kind of a different path than most, but I was very fortunate to you know, to be accepted in John Carroll, and that's why I'm forever grateful for the opportunity that the university took a chance on, you know, a 23-year-old kid like myself.
How did you stay involved in the game during those intermittent years when you're working as a bank teller and obviously you're not playing on a scholastic team? So what are you doing to continue to keep your game sharp so that you're eventually ready for that opportunity, which I'm sure you had no idea was coming when you first started out on that path?
No, I had no idea. I was an assistant coach for my older brother, who was the head coach at Berkshire. I know I'm confusing you, and then years later, I became the head coach at Berkshire. But my my older brother, who's now my current assistant at John Carroll, Pat Moran, he was the head coach at Berkshire. And after work, after being a bank teller, I'd go and I would coach. And most of the time, he needed me to kind of play scout offense or scout defense. And you know, I was just playing against you know, a couple high school kids, and then. You know, when it became a realization that I was going to play at John Carroll, my brother and I would go to the park, and he worked me out all summer long just to get back in shape and get back in the swings of things. And I was very fortunate my first year to play around a lot of talent. That was the year we made the Final Four, just played with an abundance of talent. You know, and the rest is kind of history. I truly wasn't planning on playing at John Carroll longer than a year or two. You know, I just felt, hey, I'm too old for this. But, you know, in a weird way, I knew that I could help my dad win, you know, and I was having some success. And I was kind of enjoying it a little bit. So 1 year turned into 4 years, and I'm very proud of you know, the 4 years I was able to play at John Carroll.
What's your favorite memory, something that sticks out? Obviously, the opportunity to play for your dad, which we can dive into in a second. But is there one thing in particular that stands out about your career, a moment, a game?
Yeah, you know what? I would have to say playing with my younger brother. It was truly special. We're a very close family. My younger brother is the current head coach at Lake Catholic High School. You know, having the opportunity to play in the Final Four with him, it brings chills up my spine. It's a special moment. Again, like I mentioned earlier, you know, my goal, or you know, my career path, you know, my basketball ambitions always started and ended at John Carroll, and my brother had the same type of mindset as I did, and I felt for years that maybe I, you know, that was our plan. Our plan was to go to John Carroll and play, you know, for my father, and you know, because of my poor academics, I felt like I failed him. I felt like I failed my family, you know, and that really, you know, to be able to play with him and to be significant contributors on the Final Four team in Division III was something that, you know, I'll live with for the rest of my life.
Absolutely. To be able to do it with your brother, be able to do it with your father, can't imagine much that would be much more rewarding, especially since it's something that you had been dreaming about and thinking about since you were a kid. What was it like playing for your dad in terms of that player coach son-father relationship? How did you guys walk that line? And just how did both of you handle that? What do you remember about it?
You know what? My father is a lot easier on me than he was my younger brother. You know what? My dad and I, we just connected. He never had to say a word to me. We were always on the same page. you know what? It's that point guard, head coach type connection where nothing needs to be said. It's just a simple look. And again, he would never bring me in and tell me, oh, son, you had a great game, or son, you did that. It was just a look that he would have on his face. And I think that relationship started when we were younger. I think, you know, I remember striping parking lots with them. And I remember we'd have two or three different jobs. And I knew the only way for us to get home quicker, okay, after, you know, a long Saturday, was to think, you know, it was to think before my dad asked me to do something, whether it was go grab a can of paint or go fill up the gas or fill up the machine with gas. I always kind of knew what he wanted before he asked. And I think, you know, you fast forward 20, 30 years later, that kind of translated to the basketball court. You know, we were just always on the same page. I don't ever recall us butting heads, you know, maybe other than the one time I kicked the ball, you know, through the rafters because I was pissed off about something, you know, and he threw me out of practice. But, you know, that happens. That certainly happens. But it was phenomenal. It was a great relationship. He was very, you know, he embraced the fact that I was a little bit older. You know, he knew, you know, days to push me, days to, hey, give Pete a little slack today. You know, maybe take the day off from practice because my body wasn't as well taken care of as some of the 18-year-olds. You know, we just had a connection. My younger brother kind of, you know, him and my dad butted heads a little bit more often. But again, those are some experiences that we would never trade anything for in the whole world.
As a coach, what is one thing or two things maybe that stand out for you that you learned from your dad? You could take that in any direction that you want. Something that you learned about coaching from your dad that still influence what you do right now today.
It's hard work and preparation. I tell you, you know what? I think coaches nowadays, they have it so easy. You know, you're able to pull up Synergy and have Synergy break it down every film for you, right? You know, I remember having to go on long bus trips or car trips with my dad to go pick up a VHS.
Or, absolutely.
You know, going out scouting when he was at St. Joe's, you know, getting in a van and picking up his assistant coach and driving down to Ken to watch McKinley play on a Tuesday night. You know, coaches nowadays, they have it easy. They truly do. You know, but again, I think it's the work ethic. I think it's the work ethic that he instilled in us, you know, beyond the game of basketball. You know, that is one thing that I take away and I pride myself on. Maybe I watch too much film. You know, maybe that's my problem. You know, the generation, you know, that we have coming up, their attention spans aren't as long as ours were, right? I mean, you probably remember those hour-long film sessions over at Kent State.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I remember and some of your buddies falling asleep, right? You know, in the back
right.
row.
I always say with the VCR, I remember more vividly than anything is coaches trying to get to the play that they wanted you to watch and hitting that fast forward and rewind button and skipping like 2 minutes ahead or 2 minutes behind. And so you might be in the film session for an hour, but you might have actually watched like 4 minutes of relevant film during that time. Yeah, it was a different era. Any coach who never experienced that has no idea how painful that was, both as a coach and as a player.
Yeah, I think we have it made. So we use Synergy and I have it. I have our GA transfer it to our huddle, you know, because I like to use huddle. I like how I'm able to navigate through it a little bit easier than Synergy. So, you know, what we do now is our film sessions, you know, we condense them. We make sure that we shorten the clips up on huddle, you know, to 7-8 seconds long. So, you know, I advise my assistants, my brother and, you know, Coach Roll, another staff member that's been with our program for a while. I advise them that, hey, you're not allowed to have a clip that's longer than 8 seconds because these kids, you know, they can't pay attention that long. So we put a lot of pride into the film work. You know, to answer your question, it's film work. It's preparation. It's outworking the opponent. I remember in high school, it's probably my fifth game of my coaching career. And I remember I was coaching against Chagrin Falls. And, Coach Berger at the time, he's still there. I remember leaving that game. They beat us. I remember he outcoached me. And I knew that. And it was something that really upset me. So I really pride myself on being prepared and getting our guys as prepared as possible. And that's what my father always did. I'm going to be honest. My dad wasn't the best X's and O's guy. He wasn't reinventing the game of basketball. He wasn't an innovator. He just expected everyone to play hard. He's probably, without a question, the best motivator that I've ever been around. And that's just not the game of basketball, but that's a game of life as well. He's a heck of a motivator. And you can ask any one of his former players that, he got the best out of everybody. And that's something I tried to do that, I'm still working on early in my career.
When did you know that you wanted to coach? Was that something that you had in the back of your mind as a kid growing up while you're playing that someday I want to follow my dad's footsteps and be a coach? Or was that something that – when did it come to you that you wanted to coach? Was it something you always knew?
You know what? I don't know. I just – that's the only thing in life that I know. It was either that or painting parking lots. I didn't enjoy painting parking lots as much as I'd love going to the gym with my dad and practice. I say this jokingly, but sometimes I wish my dad was a doctor, because I probably would have followed his suit. I probably would have went into, the medical field. I don't know. I just know that that's all I know. And that's not a cop out, or that's a truthful answer. It's the only thing in the world that I know how to do. It's an incredible passion. It's something that, sometimes drives you insane. For my first year, as a head coach, I'm not a big guy to begin with. On a good day, I weigh 165 pounds. My first year, I lost about 14 pounds, and I say, man, this is stressful. But I loved it. I loved the competitiveness. I love the relationships that I've been able to establish. I love working with young men. I love building, programs. I love the preparation aspect of it. I love everything involved with it. Probably more so than I actually love the games. Just the preparation and the practice and the scouting and, interacting with the guys and getting everyone prepared. The game itself, isn't the funnest part. It's everything else that's involved with it that I really enjoy the most.
Initially, was your thought process high school coaching? Was it college coaching? Obviously, John Carroll was something that was on your mind as a player and your dad's there as a head coach. Were you thinking and leaning more towards high school? Were you leaning more towards college? Did you just want to be involved in the game? Where were you at in terms of that?
Well, when I finished playing at John Carroll, I was 27 years old, let's say, 26, 27 years old. And, a good friend of mine was Jason Pijak. He was head coach at Beachwood, which is like 2 miles from John Carroll. And I had another victory lap. I had to get my teaching certification. I was able to coach with him and we had some success. And I said, I thought to myself, I could do this job. So the Berkshire job opened and, I was there for 4 years. I had some success there. And it dawned on me that, I didn't want to be in the classroom anymore. I went into, to be a phys ed teacher. And the only reason I went into phys ed was, to enable me to coach basketball. So, I had some success in high school. And then I remember I called my mom and I said, this is my dad. I think he's going on year 20 and he was slowing down a little bit. So I asked my mom, I go, how long is dad coaching at John Carroll? and she couldn't give me a straight answer. She didn't know. And, I asked my dad, I said, dad, would you mind if I helped you out? And it wasn't about the paycheck. It doesn't pay much to begin with. And, I was able to help him out, for his last 5 years. And, the last 2 or 3 years, he really, he really allowed me to do things the way I wanted to. And we had success. And I think it was then where I'm like, you know what? I could coach at this level. You know, it's going to be hard. You know, these guys are incredible. The OEC is one of, if not the top Division III conferences in the nation. You know, all of these guys, you know, from the top team to the bottom team, they're all extremely well coached. You know, I just remember thinking that I could do this. So, I went back and got my master's, because I knew that was a requirement to obtain the John Carroll job. So I went back and my wife and I, we took loans out, you know, my, 2 years before my dad stepped down, again, not knowing if it was going to go favorable for me, if the university was even going to hire me. So, you know, I went back, I got my master's so I could check that box. And I'm going to be honest with you, I spent 9 months on my portfolio. I've spent 9 months preparing for that interview. I truly, you know, I wanted that job more than anything in the world. I've never felt that much joy in my life than when I walked into Lori Massa, the AD at the time, and she told me, she was going to offer me the position. I remember I left her office. I went right down to my dad's office and we cried for about 5 minutes. It was truly, it was something to, you know, if you work that hard and to see all the hard work pay off, it really, everything came in the full tuition. And it was a special moment to you know, to obtain that position as head coach.
All right. So that 9 months of prep, what does that look like? What are you doing in that time? What are you putting together so that just, and again, most coaches out there that are part of the audience probably aren't going to spend 9 months preparing for an interview, but all coaches at some point in their life are going to prepare for an interview. So maybe what lessons did you learn from what you did that you could pass along to other coaches that could benefit them as they try to go for their next job?
Well, I had a pretty good idea of what departments would be a part of the interview process. So basically doing research, number one, on, you know, when the job opened, you know, what that interview process looks like. So, you know, that was part of it. You know, knowing that the enrollment would probably have a voice. I studied the numbers at John Carroll. You know, where do they get students from? What percent of students come from Pennsylvania, Indiana, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati? I studied those numbers. You know, I studied the individuals that I thought would be a part of the interview process. I memorized their backgrounds, where they're from, what high school they went to, how many children they had. My portfolio itself was about 70 pages long that my wife and I think we spent about $400 or $500 on making sure that every little piece of literature had zero errors in it, having it professionally, the borders done. I could go down the budgeting, you know, what it's like to budget Division III, you know, exactly how much needs to be spent in various areas, because I knew that would be a question that would probably pop up. You know, to saving up enough money to buy a suit. You know, then my wife was, you know, just finishing up her PhD and she was in grad school. So, you know, we didn't have, you know, all the money, you know, back then. And, you know, I remember going out and buying a $100 suit. And it was, you know, I remember my wife telling me at the time, you better get this job. And, you know, having it tailored, again, it was just, it was a passion. It's something that I, a part of me wanted to earn it, right? You know, I didn't want people to assume that this job was given to me because of who my father was. So I think that was part of my reasoning for spending so much time and preparing so hard, you know, for that big interview. And, you know, I didn't sleep for days leading up to that interview. You know, I was very anxious, to say the least.
Was there anything that surprised you in the interview? Anything that you weren't prepared for?
Ah, that's a good question. Where did they stump me? I'm sure they stumped me with something. You know what they did? They brought in two individuals that I was not prepared for. So I was able to steer the conversation away so I didn't have to, you know, interact with them as much as the other departments that were in the process.
When you take over for your father, obviously huge shoes to fill. Obviously you go from transitioning as an assistant to the head coach. You want to, I'm sure, put your stamp, your imprint on it. And you probably had some slightly different things that you may have wanted to do different from what your father had done previously, but yet you don't want to step on his toes. So how did you go about making the transition from your dad, who had been there for 25 years, to his son taking over the program? It seems like there's a pretty fine line that you have to walk there to put your stamp on it and yet still honor your dad's legacy. So what do you remember about that, let's say the first 3 months on the job, trying to navigate, hey, I'm no longer sitting off to the side. Now I'm taking over the office that used to be my dad's.
A week after I got the job, they threw his name on the court. So that was just some added pressure, obviously. You know what? Because the individuals that we had in the program were guys that, you know, I was a part of the recruiting process and built relationships, you know, with the team. You know, it was a very smooth transition, right? You know, our guys, that, you know, at the time, I was kind of heading a lot of the offensive stuff. I was, as we called it, the offensive coordinator. So there really wasn't, you know, much of an adjustment when it came to the personnel, nor with the coaching staff, other than bringing my brother along, my older brother, who was a very successful head coach at Berkshire and then Madison. He's a teacher, and he's with me now, you know, as kind of our offensive coordinator at John Carroll. It really wasn't about me. And I remember my first game, we were playing in Buffalo's Hilbert College, and you know, obviously I was extremely anxious, extremely nervous, first game, blah, blah, blah. And I thought about for days, what am I going to say to these guys, right? What am I going to say to these seniors, you know, that have been a part of a championship team previously? And all I just simply came up with, I had this big speech, you know, I was going to kick the locker and I was going to scream and get these guys, you know, revved up for a game at Hilbert College in front of 25 people. You know, I was going to change the world that day. But, you know, it dawned on me 5 seconds before I started the speech. It's not about me. You know, it's about them. And all I said to the guys was, guys, this isn't my legacy. It's your legacy. You know, let's go out there and win a basketball game. That first year was such a special moment, special year for, you know, not only myself, but my family, you know, my siblings. You know, we were able to win the conference championship, you know, make the Sweet 16, win the OAC championship on our home court in front of a, you know, sold-out crowd. That's special. You know, some of my fondest memories growing up, you know, my best memories growing up have been John Carroll University's gym. And, you know, that was one of them, you know, that I will forever remember.
What were the conversations like with your dad during that first season?
He's a tough critic. You know, still this day, yeah, there's times where, you know, we're on the bus and he either calls myself or one of our assistants and we go, oh, okay, who's going to take this phone call? You know, win or lose, he always seems to add his 2 cents. And sometimes, you know, I'd say, Dad, relax, you know, a little bit. But, you know, that first year, he was loving it. He really enjoyed it. He traveled with us. He didn't come to practices. He didn't do any film work. Although I did notice that he was watching our huddle a lot on his own secretly. And he would always kind of come and say, hey, yeah, you know, this team runs a little bit of the high low. What do you, I know, Dad, I know. You know, he would check in to make sure I was doing my homework. So, you know, he still does that time to time. I just spoke to him about an hour ago and we were talking about the team we play in next week. And he already did a research on the head coach and he knows his entire bio. So I know, Dad. I've read about him, too. I know he likes to do X, Y, and Z. So, you know, he has his little moments like that. But, you know, that first year, he was great. He loved it. He attended most of, if not all, the games. It got him out of the house a little bit, too. It was special. He enjoyed it.
As a head coach, when do you feel like you had a real solid handle on your philosophy offensively and defensively? Do you feel like it was pretty well shaped when you got the job, or do you feel like it sort of morphed and changed a little bit as you understood exactly what you had and what you wanted to do?
The game, I think you know this, the game has changed drastically.
It's so different.
The last three, I'm going to say 3 years. And it not only has it changed, but you know, the individuals have changed. They're different. You know, these kids coming up are a lot different than, you know, individuals 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago. So the way you coach and the way you communicate has changed. You know, X's and O's, obviously ball screening is everything, you know, at the collegiate level, at least in the OAC, that's a big part of it. Whereas 5 years ago or 6 years ago, when I was kind of the offensive coordinator under my dad, I don't remember working on ball screening defense more than once or twice a week. Nowadays, you got to do it 2 or 3 times of practice. And not only do you have to master one way of doing it, you got to master 3 or 4 different ways of ball, you know, defending ball screens. So it's transformed. And I think the state of basketball is in a different place now. And I don't think we're going to know for a few years whether it's in a better place, but I know it's changing. And I know coaches have to change the way they communicate and how they prepare and how they coach, or else they're going to be left in the dust a little bit. And I think we're going through a little bit of that transformation right now. We're not doing the 5 in, 5 out like my father did and I did that first year. Things are just a little bit different right now. So I don't know if that kind of answers your question, but, you know, I think, you know, you got to be able to evolve. You got to be willing to change. And I think the most successful coaches are able to do that.
Absolutely. To go along with that, when you think about how you grow and improve as a coach, where do you go when you're trying to learn about the game? Are you watching other coaches at the college level? Are you watching European basketball? Where are you going to try to learn things about the game to help you and your team to improve?
I mean, college basketball. I years ago, I didn't watch much of the college basketball, but I'm a big college basketball fan now. Even the NBA a little bit, although I don't get that Cavs station because of YouTube TV. But
I know.
like, for example, I watched Youngstown State tonight. My nephew, Luke Chacon, he's a freshman there, and he's playing about 20-some minutes for Jared Calhoun over at Youngstown State. So, you know, I've been watching them a lot and some of the things they do offensively. But also a lot of defensive things. You know, you got the pack line defense nowadays that seems like a lot of teams are running. So I think I just go to people or go to programs where I watch games. I think that's where it starts. I think watching, you know, your peers. I'm a big Division III basketball fan. So you'll see me, any given night, I'm on my phone pulling up a game or two, kind of watching that while the kids are, screaming in the background. But Division III basketball is my pride and joy. And again, I really enjoy watching, mainly our conference. I really watch, some of the guys in our conference, Mike Fulmer at Mount and Coach Goodwin at Capital. These are guys, John Vanderwall. I can go down the list. Travis Schwab, Tommy Heil at BW. Those guys, I really watch their stuff. And it's a special connection. It's a special bond that the OAC coaches have. And that's what I think makes our conference, if not one of the best Division III conferences in the nation.
So obviously you're competing with all those guys on the basketball court, but you're also competing in a lot of ways with them in terms of recruiting. So how do you approach recruiting? What's your thought process in terms of how you put together your initial list of players that you want to go out and check out? And then how do you begin to narrow that down and really make your pitch to get guys to come and be a part of your program there at Carroll?
Well, you know, the list starts, you know, as kids, their junior year. You know, we throw it on a spreadsheet. And then after their junior year, you know, we probably make about 60, 70 phone calls, you know, to various, you know, high school athletes. And, you know, a lot of the times we just kind of have little informal conversations with them. And the number one thing that we ask are, how are your academics? What are you looking to study? You know, before we talk about points per game and all that other stuff, I think the most important component, or at least a component that is what they want to study, right? You know, I advise young men, you know, go to an institution that has what you want, right? You know, if you want to be if you want to get into business, well, you know, we got probably the second best business school in the state of Ohio, the 16th best business school in the country. You know, if you're looking, you know, to go into something, nursing, well, we don't have nursing. So, you know, you should probably find another institution. So it starts very early on in our recruiting process. And we hear the word business, and we hear young men that have a 3.5, our eyes light up because we know we have a chance with them. We know that we have something that we could sell them and be honest. You know, too many people, and again, I firmly believe this, too many young men make the mistake by going to institutions that don't have what they want academically. You know, they choose 4 years, you know, when they could come to John Carroll and make a decision that's going to benefit them for 40 years. We're extremely blessed to be one of the highest academic institution in our conference. We're very proud of that. So we recruit young men that are high achievers, right? You're a high achiever. You show me a young man that's a high achiever in the classroom, they're probably going to be a high achiever, you know, on the basketball court. So that's the number one thing we look for is their academics. And that's most important to us. So it's a screening process. So, you know, we start the list 60, 70 individuals, and probably right now we're at about 8 or 9. You know, that's about all that we're targeting. And then, you know what, we bring in roughly 4 to 5 individuals a year. We don't have a JV program like a lot of Division III schools do. And a lot of Division III schools do not advertise that they have JV programs. You know, we don't have a quota. I'm not told by my boss that I have to bring in 12 individuals or 15 individuals because our enrollment is doing well. So we're very blessed. I think our university sells itself. Really, it's truly about the student athlete. And I know coaches probably get on here and say that, but you know, you look at what our alumni are doing. And that's what I tell, you know, recruits, look at what our alumni are doing. Yeah, you know, we're pretty, you know, we have a lot of success. We have a lot of notoriety, not just in the Cleveland area, but the whole Midwest. And that's our pitch. Our pitch is very simple. You come to John Carroll, number one, for the academics. Okay. You come here because we have what you want. Number two, you come here for the social component, right? I say this all the time. College is supposed to be the best 4 years of your life. If you love a beautiful campus, 8.3 miles from downtown Cleveland, you know, with big brick buildings, you know, we're the place for you. And then the last thing is the basketball. You know, we're one of the most successful Division III schools in the country. You know, I think we have more wins, more championships than just about anyone in the OEC over the last 30 years. And we're very proud of that tradition. You know, that's who we are. We're not changing our pitch. We are who we are. We know our niche. And we're going to naturally, you know, you gravitate and you get the right kids if you continue to have the same pitch. We never talk about other institutions. We kind of have a bond, most of the coaches in the OEC, that, hey, we don't talk about other programs, that we don't do the negative recruiting. You know, all we focus on is ourselves, our institution, and what we have to offer.
When you're evaluating kids, how do you balance watching the player in their high school setting versus their AAU setting? And then how do you build relationships both with high school coaches and with AAU coaches so that you have those types of connections with players?
Well, I think the evaluation is hard. I think that's probably the hardest part because, you know, we've seen kids, we've probably gone to 6-7 AAU games and probably seen 17 of their high school games, but you really don't know what you have until they're on your court and you're coaching them for 7 straight days. You know, and then you're able to see, you know, what they do well, what are some things they need to work on. As far as relationships, again, high school basketball and AAU is so different. It's like high school basketball. There's I don't know what the average lifespan for high school coaches are nowadays. The good old days, you'd have a coach that was at school for 20, 30 years, and you just know him because you see him at, the local pub, coaching clinic. Now, every other year there seems like there's new coaches. So, something that we're starting to do is do coaching clinics, free coaching clinics for coaches in Northeast Ohio, for they can come and we can build relationships. We offer a prospect camp, a true prospect camp. It's not just to, make a couple bucks. It's to truly evaluate, local talent and individuals that we're recruiting. But like you said, it's all about relationships. It's building a connection. My father always told us, and he was just on us, me and my brother the other day, about the recruiting process. And he says, you have to find a connection with a young man. Does his grandmother or did his grandfather go to John Carroll? Is his high school coach an alum? Is his English teacher a John Carroll grad? You always got to find that connection. That's what we try to do, to build a relationship, with the coach and with the student athlete.
Once you get a player on campus and you bring them in as part of your program, how do you go about building competitiveness into your team? Obviously, you recruit competitiveness. You want to bring competitive kids in who are going to compete, and that should be a character trait that you want them to have. But going above and beyond that, obviously, you want them, once they're in your practice setting, you want them to compete and push each other. And yet you know that there's going to be some kids that inevitably aren't going to get to play as much as they would like to play. So how do you continue to stoke the player's competitive fire? Are there any things that you do within your practice setting that, again, maybe another coach could take away as they're trying to figure out, hey, how can I make my practices more competitive?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question because, we just kind of had a little conversation with our team about competing every day. What we try to do is we try to make every drill competition, right? It could be a simple free throw drill. It could be any drill. We try our darndest to make it competitive. And what you do there is you find the guys that want to compete, that want to play. Everybody wants to play, but who really wants to play? And I think that's where you find out. The evaluation process starts in practice. Whereas I don't know if individuals understand that, when they get to the next level. Because like you mentioned, everyone that plays, college basketball is probably the top guy at their high school, if not one or two. And then they make that transformation to the college level, and they really don't understand what it takes to compete, what it takes to play hard, at our level. So trying to instill that in them takes time. It really does. It takes time to build that competitiveness, but eventually it happens. And again, I think that comes with, the strength aspect of it, the confidence. Once they build a little bit of confidence, they tend to play a little bit harder. But, like I said, what we try to do is make everything competitive. And ultimately, I think that makes for a better practice. And it pushes everybody, in your program, to compete every single day and ultimately makes you a better basketball team.
Do you chart wins and losses or keep track of certain statistics within practice that you then can go back and use with the player and say, hey, we're looking at, like, we're charting, again, whether it's deflections and steals, or we're charting charges, or we're keeping track of 3-point percentage every day, or whenever we go 3-on-3, we're always keeping track of wins and losses. Do you do any of that kind of thing?
No. Maybe that's from my father. You know, we're not full of analytics. You lose a drill, you do 5 push-ups. We tell guys that, hey, you know, if you're not shooting the ball well, or you know, you're struggling from the foul line, you know, you got to go get in the gym and work on that craft on your own. You know, we don't have 7 hours a day like some of the Division I schools have.
Right.
You know,
right.
We get 2 or 3 kids that come late every day because of class. Or we have one guy that has to leave 10 minutes early because he has a night class. So we don't have that, like I said, 6-7 hour window where we can waste time. I shouldn't say waste time, but work on free throw shooting. Yeah, we put guys on the line periodically throughout the practice, pressure situations, all that stuff. But, if you're struggling to shoot the ball, if you're struggling to make free throws, hey, you got to go find time on your own. Get your butt in the gym after practice. Wake up a little bit earlier in the day and get your butt in there. Because that's what it's about. It's about wanting to do it. If you're not going to do it, then ultimately you're not going to get the minutes you want. And for guys that come in and ask about minutes, and everybody wants to play, right? It's very simple. Here's what I tell everybody. Okay. An open gym. Let's go back to Mike when you were playing. Where'd you go to high school?
Strongsville.
Okay. So you're having an open gym right before basketball starts. And back then, there's how many kids were in the gym from freshmen to seniors?
There's probably a lot, 50, 60.
And let's say hypothetically there's one court and you're a captain and you're a senior and you got another senior who's a captain. Are you taking the 12th man on the freshman team with your first pick?
Absolutely not.
Nah, and why not?
Because you want to win, because you want to stay on the floor, and that's something that kids don't understand that anymore.
Yeah. So if someone comes in and they say, "Coach, what do I get? Why aren't I playing?" I say, "Listen, when you guys were playing open gym, where were you picked in open gyms? When that game was tied and you needed a basket, were you getting the ball? It's as simple as that. I think that kind of puts things in perspective." For individuals when they start comparing themselves to others, right? People don't want to lose, right? If you lose in that open gym, Mike, you may sit out for 20, 30 minutes.
But that culture's gone. That culture's gone, Pete. I mean, isn't it? Because kids don't play pickup basketball the same way you did or the same way I did. It's just not the same. Like you mentioned earlier, when you were talking about your time as a player that, you played against older guys, you're playing here and there in these different places. And this is something that we've talked about on the podcast a lot, but I think that idea of stacking up against other guys, like, look, I got next and I'm looking down the row of 7 or 8 guys that are sitting over here on the sideline and, yeah, I know who I want to pick who's going to help me to win because I want to keep playing. And I think kids today, they don't always get – like to me, that's instant feedback. Like it's cut and dry. Like people aren't picking you because they don't like you or they like you or your dad is this person or this guy complained to the coach. Like when you're playing pickup basketball, like I'm only picking you because I think you can help me win. And that's it. There's no other criteria. And I think that's something that a lot of times is lost. And I'm sure that – it's a challenge, and it's funny to me that you have to remind kids of, hey, think about what was going on because it's just that culture is not here anymore.
Yeah, but I always twist it too. I follow up by saying, listen, you don't have to prove yourself to me. You don't have to prove yourself to the coaching staff. You got to prove yourself to your peers first, right? You got to earn their trust, before you earn our trust. Maybe by spinning it that way to them, maybe they comprehend it a little bit better because you're right. This generation is a little bit different than what we grew up in. But, if their peers don't think that they can play, I think it's that cut and dry sometimes. But I don't know. You're right, though. You're right. This is a little bit different of a generation. But, yeah, those are conversations that we have periodically. And again, I think – collectively, guys started understanding, and again, I'm talking about, you know, the 19th, 20th man on our team that might need that reminder, not necessarily, you know, our eighth or ninth man that's just trying to crack that top five lineup. Those conversations aren't really had all that often.
How do you keep those kids who aren't getting the minutes that they want? How do you make sure that you keep them engaged and have those conversations with them and get them to understand that maybe their time isn't today, especially if you're thinking about a kid who's new, who's a freshman, comes in, they're trying to adjust to college basketball and they're not playing as much as they would like. How do you, what kind of conversations do you have with those players to make sure that they're going to continue to put forth their best effort to, again, help prepare the rest of your team for the games that you have on your schedule, but just to also keep their spirits up so that they're not dragging everybody else down?
Probably, those are a lot of conversations, right? You know, those are frequent conversations, you know, that we have, that we know there's talent there. It's just not ready for our level. You know, I think film, right? We do a lot of film. We film our practices and we show them what they need to do. We show them previous film, teams that we had a year or two ago, on how we defend certain things and what it takes to win and what it takes to get something accomplished, whether it's ball screening defense or, you know, pressure or, you know, various things that we do on the offensive end. You know, we show that to them, you know, so they understand. Those are a lot of conversations. I think it's drawn off past experiences and saying, okay, look at this young man. You know, his first year, he struggled. He struggled to get the minutes, but you got to be patient. You got to wait your turn. And again, it's reiterating that it's constant reminders. Be patient. Your time's coming. It's having those conversations, you know, pretty regularly, you know, to keep them motivated, but also tell them that, hey, you know what? You're always one sprained ankle away from, you know, you're being thrown in the fire. You got to be ready. It's like a backup quarterback. You never know when that quarterback's going to get that hit, and you better be ready to go when your number's called, because that's going to be an opportunity, especially early on in someone's college career, that you know, you got to seize that moment and be prepared for it.
How do you develop the leaders in your program from a player standpoint? How do you provide opportunities for your players to grow and lead their teammates? Are there things that you specifically do to try to encourage leadership? Just how do you go about growing your players as leaders?
You know, I think put them in positions to make decisions. You know, we'll come out of a timeout or in a timeout, and I'll lean towards some upperclassmen and say, what do you guys see out there at halftime? You know, some of the upperclassmen. And the younger guys see that, you know, they see the way I interact with some of the upperclassmen, you know, guys that have been through battles and been through some wars and won games at a very high level. You know, as far as, you know, that vocal leadership, it's bringing individuals in and saying, hey, I need more out of you as a vocal leader. I think the best leaders are always ones that lead by example still. You know, you could be a rah-rah, rah-rah guy, but at the end of the day, if you're not producing, if you're not in that gym every single day, you know, I question whether or not you're a leader. We have a young man, his name is Jackson Sartain. He's shattered every Division III three-point record known to man in about 3.5 years, okay? You know, this kid hasn't said more than 5 words, you know, publicly to our team in the 5 years that he's been with us. Well, 4 years. Last year really wasn't basketball. But this young man, he outworks everybody. His workout regimen, and I'm not lying when I say this, he makes 1,000 three-pointers a day in the summer. Not takes 1,000 threes. He makes 1,000 threes every summer. And everybody knows that. He's not on social media posting saying he's grinding it, or he's not telling everybody or anything of that nature. He just outworks everybody. So he is a leader. You know, I wish he was a little bit more vocal, but, you know, our younger guys see what it takes. And he's only probably 6 foot. You know, he's probably not the quickest kid in the world, but he's mastered a craft unlike anyone I've ever seen in my 30-some years of being around the game of basketball, and I don't think I'll ever see an individual like this come through Division III ever again. It's just that incredible, and it's from his work ethic.
Yeah, that work ethic, it's hard to replace that. And I think no matter what level you are, I think as a coach, one of the things that is always the most satisfying is when you see a kid get as close to their potential as they possibly can. I think as coaches, one of the things that's most frustrating is when you have a player who has a lot of talent but doesn't maximize that talent with a great work ethic. And I think when you have a player that can, A, obviously succeed the way Jackson has, but also can set an example for your other players of like, look, he's maybe not that much better of an athlete than you. It's just that, look, he's making 1,000 shots a day. You want to be that good? You got to get in the gym and you got to do that. And that's really ultimately what it takes, is just developing that type of work ethic, developing that type of determination for a player to want to be that good. When you think about being able to put together the type of team that you want to put out on the floor, and you think about what your teams are known for, if somebody comes into your gym and watches your team play, what do you hope they walk away from a John Carroll game saying, man, that team is really what? What do you want them to say?
I hope they say John Carroll plays hard. We're not blessed with the 7-footers, nor are we. Do we have guys that can jump over the backboard? You know, we don't have guys that can go 3 rounds with Mike Tyson. You know, we have young men that come to our institution, you know, because they love the game of basketball, you know, and they want to play it, but they also want to be successful in life. You know, so if we're able, if someone's, you know, able to leave our game and, or leave our practice and say, you know what, they play hard. That's probably the best compliment you can give our team and our staff, is that we play hard. We're very, you know, prideful of that. In the preseason, we probably at least once a week, I know I watch our practice and I highlight throughout the practice every opportunity someone took a possession off. It could be something as simple as taking the ball out of bounds and just casually walking, or it could be a stunt on a free throw, or it could be that point guard who's you know, who's staying at half court with his hands on his hips during a free throw situation. Again, we dissect these situations, you know, probably too much, but we're proud of that. We know that we're going to have to find ways to win basketball games. And it's not always going to be because we have the most talent, but it's because we play harder. And, you know, I think we got a nice group this year, although we're on a little bit of a pause because of a COVID outbreak. But we have a young team that they're just learning what it takes to play and compete at our level. And they're understanding. They're showing, you know, some bright spurts, some bright moments of playing the game extremely hard. And that's something really exciting to look forward to in the future.
When you think about your staff, and obviously you have your brother on your staff, and you think about managing them as a head coach and delegating responsibility, how do you divide that up? I know you mentioned earlier that at one point you were the offensive coordinator for your dad, and you just think about how there's lots of different ways, obviously, that you can organize and put together your staff and their responsibilities. So what's your philosophy? How do you approach that?
Well, we, you know, all of our staff members are John Carroll grads. You know, obviously my brother, he runs the offense. Myself and Spencer Rule has been with our program 12 years. He's a John Carroll grad as well. Him and I do the defense. You know, Coach O'Brien, Frank O'Brien, he's the old guy of the bunch. He's been at the program close to 18 years. He's a high school coach for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. You know, he kind of does our special situations. You know, the thing is, what makes these guys so special, Mike, and I'm going to be very, you know, honest and transparent, they're not doing it for the paycheck. These guys are losing money, you know, just to drive to the office. Yep. I just talked to one of the one of my coaches, you know, the thing is they all have other jobs too. Spencer, for example, is in Toledo. He went to two different games tonight. You know, that's hard work. That's dedication. You know, our staff, I'm blessed. I know every coach says it, but, you know, these are some of my best friends, you know, that I've known for a very, very long time. So, you know, we get along very, very well. You know, to have alumni, you know, that do it, they do it because they love it and they want to give back to such a great university. I think really tells it that the whole story of who we are and what we're about here at John Carroll.
All right. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance, Pete, to answer one final two-part question. And the first part of it is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as your biggest challenge moving forward? And then number two, when you get up every day in the morning, what's your biggest joy about what you get to do as the head men's basketball coach at John Carroll?
So my biggest joy, I'll start with that one. My biggest joy, coach at John Carroll University, I guess every morning when I walk into work, I get to sit at the same desk my dad sat at for 25 years. To be able to see my two boys, my 8-year-old, 6-year-old, and my 4-year-old daughter come to the game and be the ball boys and ball girl for our team is special, right? It's only a game of basketball, Mike. You know, these are memories that, you know, I'm creating for my family, that will last a lifetime. Memories that I've talked about, you know, early on in this conversation. Now, first part is biggest challenge I see for the next 2 years. I think just, you know, trying to navigate through this pandemic. You know, I think that goes beyond just, you know, shutdowns and cancellations and these forfeits or whatever the heck's going on. It's the mental part of it. These high school kids and these younger people, I don't think we've seen the full effect of what the virtual learning has caused. And I think there's that mental component of it that, you know, anyone in a leadership role or anyone that's coaching it has an extra responsibility that maybe coaches didn't have 4 or 5 years ago, right? There's that mental component of it that we're going to have to be there for our student athletes now more than ever because, the world's has changed so drastically. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge is just navigating through, this pandemic and, you know, the aftermath of everything that's brought forth.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anybody ever would have in a million years seen it coming. And then the fact that it's lasted this long and we're now seemingly back towards, these outcomes of where I think we at least thought we were going to have a relatively normal season this year back in September, October. And now who knows what's going to happen from this point forward. So certainly that's a challenge for all of us. Pete, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance. How can people find out more about you and your program? How can they connect with you? And then after you share that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Well, listen, our gym's always open. It's open. We'd love for any high school coach, college coach, to come watch a practice. We'll get you ready at half court. We'll have a practice plan ready for you, a bottle of water, maybe some pizza. Really encourage anyone that wants to come out, pick up the phone, give me a call, 216-397-4511, or send me an email, pmoran07@jcu.edu. I really enjoy coaches coming out because, in a weird way, it gives me a little extra pep in my step every day, that added motivation to make sure I don't disappoint anyone, for making a trip out to University Heights, Ohio.
Pete, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time. Again, we really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.